You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have a great lineup today. We caught up with Ian Desmond, who recently signed with the Rockies. We also spoke to Richard Justice, who tells us the goings-on around the baseball world. We also caught up with Dodgers beat writer Ken Gernick and Rangers third base coach Tony Beasley, who stood up to cancer. Enjoy the podcast. I'm with a guy who has what I call the greatest work ethic I've ever seen. And I'm talking about Rockies first baseman, Ian Desmond. Ian, thank you so much for being with me. And Ian, I got to tell you, when I look at this lineup, I'm almost looking at Murderer's Row. It's an impressive lineup. And my question to you is, why did you decide to sign a five-year deal with the Rockies?
I think there's just a lot to believe in here. You know, I think there's, you know, a lot of guys that believe in each other and a lot of guys that believe that they can get better. And I want to be a part of something like that. I think there's an opportunity here to do something special and bring some fun back to the Colorado baseball fans.
I mean, if you guys can get a bullpen, I mean, my God, you guys could be talking about winning the West. That's how good this team could be. Do you realize that?
Yeah, I mean, Bill, you watched it, you know, when I was with Washington back in the day when we used to go in and play San Diego. You know, Bud Black always had that bullpen out in San Diego in the top in the league, you know, top three in the league pretty much every year from what I can recall. I certainly never enjoyed facing them, and that wasn't with guys throwing 150 miles an hour either. That was, you know, guys pitching and hitting their spots and being effective, not being scared. And that's what it's going to take in Colorado, I think, is just, you know, pitching-wise, is just guys believing in their stuff. And I think Bud will help them. I think Mike Redmond, you know, longtime catcher in the big leagues with managerial experience, had a good bullpen down in Miami. You know, so, like I said, there's a lot to believe in, and you know, I'm certainly bought in.
Ian, I gotta say, for the second year in a row, you're going to make a position switch. You're going to switch mm-hmm. from center field to first base. And knowing, I tell people you have the great work ethic. There's no question in my mind you're going to be successful at first base. And my question to you is, how do you feel about making the switch? And will it be as difficult as it was when you made the switch from shortstop to center field?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to prepare for it like that. You know, I'm going to prepare for it like it's going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm going to try to be the best that I can be at it. And I think, you know, hard work pays off. I've realized that over my life. The harder I work, the better the results are. So I'm going to keep on working, and hopefully I'll be able to reap the reward.
You had arguably your best year this past season. It seemed like a hard question to ask, but I'd like to ask you, what improvements would you like to make in 2017? You had arguably your best year, and not only offensively, but defensively as well.
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, to realize that the lineup, you know, there's so much diversity in our lineup here in Colorado. You know, you got DJ LeMahieu, you got Nolan Arenado, you got Cargo. You know, all completely different hitters, you know, and that's an opportunity I look at as an opportunity to learn. I think those guys all bring something different to the table and provide an opportunity for me to, you know, improve my game, you know, whether it's, you know, continuing to hit the ball the other way like DJ does so well, or, you know, hitting the ball out of the ballpark like Nolan. And then, you know, there's the superstar aspect that Cargo brings to the table. Cargo is probably one of the most established, you know, superstars, you know, that I've played with. You know, Bryce, you know, was hitting that, you know, when I was playing with him. You know, Adrian, you know, he's obviously a superstar caliber player, but doesn't embody like the superstar, you know, he's not doing commercials and things like that. So, you know, there's just a lot to learn, and I hope I can improve in all aspects of the game.
At any point, were you concerned that you might not sign with anyone, considering you had the draft pick on your back? And like you went through the previous season, were there any concerns?
Not this year. I think for the simple fact that, you know, versatility is, you know, what's playing in the game right now. Everyone's really valuing the versatility, and I proved last year that I can change positions and willing to do so in the right circumstance. So I was confident in the fact that I was going to get picked up, and and I was hopeful that I was going to be with a good team. I couldn't be happier with where I landed.
Is there any particular first baseman you plan to talk to help you out? You know, I know you said you're not going to be like a Don Mattingly in any way, but is there anyone you want to talk to?
Well, I certainly strive to be like Don Mattingly. You know what I mean? That's what my goal is. But, you know, I understand that it's going to be a learning process, and I'm going to have some learning curve there. You know, no one can just be great right off the bat. You know, I think it takes work, it takes practice, it takes repetition. But, yeah, I mean, there's a young kid in the Rockies organization named Carell Prime, who I kind of took under my wing a few years back. And you know, he's turned himself into a really good first baseman. So I'm going to pick his brain. And I've had the opportunity to play with two Gold Glove first basemen, Mitch Moreland and Adam LaRoche, who I consider friends. And I think they're guys that would be more than happy to help me out if I had any questions.
Yeah. And I got to ask you this, too. As you were going through the free agency process, was there any thoughts in your mind of possibly going back to the Nationals? And if so, why? If not, why?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I was open to it. You know, I got a lot of family there. You know, there's a lot of people that I love to be around that organization. And, you know, I was open to it. I think the Nationals were open to it. I think it's just, you know, it didn't work out. But, you know, like I said, I'm happy where I'm at.
And now you're in a different part of the country now. You're in Colorado. And it's going to be different for you. And how much does your family like Colorado?
Oh, we love it. We, my wife and I, you know, we really enjoy it here. Every time we've ever came here, we really enjoyed it. We really enjoy the people, you know, the kindness of all the people in the city that we ever interacted with. We was able to make some friends, you know, here through all the times visiting here when I was in the National League. You know, it's just a great place to live, and it's a healthy place to live. And I've got three little boys that, you know, I'm trying to raise to the best I can, and I think this is a good place to do it.
And the final question, I'd like to ask you about the Rangers. You had one great year there, and could you talk about your time with Texas?
Yeah, I mean, what a blessing that was. You know, to be able to play and learn from guys like Adrian Beltre and Carlos Beltran, you know, two players that I looked up to, you know, as a big leaguer and as a kid. You know, those are two really established players, and to watch the way, you know, the young guys did it, Rougned Odor, Ryan Rua, got a chance to meet Joey Gallo and to, you know, kind of befriend him. You know, that organization is first class, and I was able to see the way that they did it and where their success comes from. And hopefully I can use all that, you know, out here in Colorado.
Ian Desmond, thank you so much for being with me. You take care of yourself. Have a great year.
Thanks, Bill. You're the man.
I have on the line one of the best baseball writers in the country. I'm talking about Richard Justice of MLB.com. Richard, thank you for being with me. Richard, the CBA was finally ratified by the owners and the players, and it seems like the Rays are not satisfied by this ratification. Could you talk about why?
I think the Rays wanted some things that had to do, in just talking to their people, I think they wanted more. They wanted more breaks or more things that were amenable to them. I think they even wanted to do the draft. This is one of the things that had been thrown out, to have the draft picks do record one pick, revenues second pick, record revenues, all of that kind of stuff. But I think the bottom line, Bill, is, and I think the Rays know this, is they have to get the ballpark built. And they're going to have trouble competing until that happens. And for the first time last week, you know, the commissioner talked about, hey, there's an end game in this. You know, if the people of Tampa Bay do not understand the need to give the Rays a facility that would allow them to compete, then you do have to consider other options, relocation. I think in terms of the A's, who also have a ballpark option, I think everyone agrees you have to build that ballpark in Oakland, that there's not going to be a better market than Oakland going forward, and that all that wealth from Silicon Valley and from San Francisco eventually has to spill across the Bay. You know, and you have Oakland kind of sandwiched in there between Berkeley and San Francisco, and there's a there In other words, there's just not a better market. But I think the larger story, Bill, is that when this labor agreement's done, baseball will have had 26 years of uninterrupted labor peace. And between 1975 and 1995, there were 8 work stoppages.
Right.
Since then, the players and owners have worked together. The game's revenues have increased tenfold. Attendance, competitive balance, you know, the game is healthy. And to me, this labor agreement, essentially, there are tweaks in it, but essentially it was a rollover of the current deal, and it was an acknowledgement by both the players and the owners that we got a good thing going right here.
And now they're talking about traveling around the country, like to London, Cuba. I mean, it's amazing how far MLB has come, you know, between the two sides.
Yeah, and it's funny. I asked the commissioner about this last week, and I said, what's the goal for internationalization of the game? And he said, well, one thing, it's to have an expansion team on foreign soil. Now, that would, because of travel restrictions, that would either be another team in Canada or a team in Mexico City, most likely. Although, I'll tell you, you know, who knows what Cuba's going to look like in 5 years. We could be talking about Cuba being an explosive growth area, too.
Right.
But, and the other part of that is just growing the game as much as you can. And, you know, when baseball, last January, baseball signed a big deal to stream games into China. But it wasn't just streaming games into China. It was to do clinics in China and to build ballparks in Diamond in China and to grow the game in those ways. That's where the NBA's had an advantage in that, you know, basketball is played in Russia and China and all over Europe. But you know, one of the commissioner's lines is that healthy businesses expand, and that's the goal, to put as many people on this planet in position to watch baseball games and to play baseball games.
And the winter meetings just ended last week. And who do you think is the biggest winner? I have to say the Boston Red Sox. I mean, they really picked up the pitching, and I hate to pick a loser because I think it's still early, but what do you think about the Red Sox?
I agree with you on the Red Sox. You take the best team in the American League East, the most competitive division in baseball, and you put maybe the best player the most impactful player that's going to change teams this offseason in Chris Sale, and you put him there, and that's fine. But I'll tell you, I'm also excited about the Chicago White Sox. It's a very tough decision that Jerry Reinsdorf and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams made to go down this road to examine yourself and say, it's not working, let's take another path. And White Sox fans over the next couple of seasons are going to see all these young kids. And trading Sale and trading Adam Eaton is just the beginning. But they're going to see all these kids that are exciting or energetic and have a chance to get better. So, you know, from just a purely baseball standpoint, the product you're going to watch on the field, I think the White Sox will be hugely interesting the next couple of years.
I think it's too soon to judge the Nationals. I mean, the offseason is far from over. What do you think about the Nationals?
No, I think they did what they wanted to do. They got a guy to play center field. Adam Eaton can play center. Now, I think they could have gotten Andrew McCutchen to play center field, but probably the young outfielder Robles would have had to be in that deal. So what they did in getting Adam Eaton, you got a dynamic top of the lineup guy in front of all those big boppers. You allow Trey Turner to play short, and we'll find out how good he's going to be at short. But if it doesn't work out at Adam Eaton in center, and some of the metrics say he's better as a corner outfielder, although at times in his career he's played great center field. Next year, Jason Worth probably will be gone, and you can move Adam to a corner outfield spot and put Robles in center field. I'm presuming by 2018 he'll be ready to play. You know, the Nationals go into the offseason, they don't need a lot. You know, what have they won, the second most, third most games in baseball the last 5 years?
Correct.
They just would need to be in a spot to get play deeper in October. That's why Chris Sale appealed to them, just some guy that makes them more ready to play in October. That's all that's left for them, is to play deeper into October. And they're in a great spot to do that. You know, when you keep winning the most games, keep going to the postseason, you're going to play deep in October at some point.
No question about it. Richard Justice, thank you so much. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you, Bill, for having me.
My next guest is one of the best baseball writers in the country. I'm talking about Ken Gernick. He covers the Dodgers for MLB.com. Ken, thank you so much for being with me. Ken, the Dodgers received some good news recently. They recently re-signed Kenley Jansen and Justin Turner. What does that mean to the ball club?
Well, it some people say they're running in place by bringing back the guys they already had. But this is a team that always wants to win now, and the thought of losing your closer and your starting third baseman from the middle of your lineup, that was going to be a huge loss. So this team has won four straight division titles, and they expect to win a fifth. So when you also add in Rich Hill to be your number two starter, having re-signed him the previous week, and now they got their closer back and their third baseman back, at least they've got the nucleus back of the team that's been kind of a dominant team in this division over the last 4 years.
Now, Ken, I got to ask you this, though. What do they need to do to get to the next level, to beat the Cubs, to go to the World Series? Because it seems like every time the Dodgers go to the playoffs, they get stuck in either the division series or the NLCS. So how do they get to the next level?
Yeah, they've gone through several regimes trying to figure out that answer, and nobody has. It tends to be the bullpen 1 year, the offense the next year. Clayton Kershaw has had his ups and downs. And some people say it's chemistry, although I don't think there's anything wrong with the chemistry on this team.
Mm-hmm.
They've always had, one or two flaws. One year, I think really they had a chance last year to get Cole Hamels at the trade deadline. They didn't do it. And who knows what would have happened last year if they had had a Cole Hamels. They probably should have gotten to the World Series a few years ago when Hanley Ramirez broke a rib in the first game of the playoffs against the Cardinals. It's just, I don't know that they actually have failed per se, but they've either run into a hot team or they've had a bad injury at the wrong time. But I guess they got to feel kind of like Stan Kasten's other team, the Atlanta Braves, who are knocking on the door every single year. Eventually, they'll knock it down, and the Braves did it, and the Dodgers are hoping that, as long as they're still competitive and they're in there every year, they're in the race every year, eventually they're gonna get that ring.
Going into 17, what do you think is the team's biggest need? It seems to me they need maybe a second baseman. What do you think?
Yeah, what they really need, ideally, is a right-handed hitting second baseman, because they've got a hole at second base. They kind of patched it up with Chase Utley last year, and he played really well. But being a left-handed hitter in a lineup that is pretty much left-handed dominant, they need a right-handed hitter, and they've got a hole at second base. That was kind of why it was so important to bring back Justin Turner, who's the big right-handed bat in that lineup. But he needs a little help. They really struggled against left-handed starting pitching. And that's why you hear names like Brian Dozier as far as trade rumors. Mm-hmm. That the Dodgers have targeted him, maybe a couple others. He's the one, obviously, with 42 home runs.
Right.
That's right-handed bat right there. If you could pry him loose from the Twins, then you got something. And I think if they had been able to, they would have done it already. So I don't know. I'm sure that they'll continue to try, but it sounds like the Twins are holding out for maybe more than the Dodgers want to give up. I assume that the Dodgers don't want to mix and match as they have in the past couple of years with Howie Kendrick and Chase Utley. I think they want a real power bat there to complement Turner on the other side of the infield. So if you had to put a number one target, it's got to be a right-handed hitting second baseman.
Ken, before I let you go, I want to ask you about Dave Roberts. I mean, this guy... I watched this guy face the Nationals in the playoffs, and even during the regular season, I was impressed. And what do you think of him as a manager, and how far can he take this team?
Well, they've had other managers. They had Joe Torre. They had Don Mattingly. But I don't think anybody has done a better job in recent years managing the Dodgers than Dave Roberts did in his first year, when you factor in that he's never managed before. And now they tried to make it easy on him by providing him with a veteran coaching staff. They gave him plenty of statistical work and analytics. But ultimately, he had to make the decisions. And the way he maneuvered when he had a starting rotation that was decimated by injuries and he had to lean on a bullpen, what you really want from your manager is to get the most out of your players and not cost your team any losses. And I think on both counts, Dave Roberts did a great job. And, he's been recognized as the rookie of the year, as the manager of the year because of it here in his rookie season. So, there's not much more you can say other than he's got to win the ring, and that's the next goal.
Ken Gernick, listen, thank you so much. Have a great Christmas and a happy new year.
You too, Bill. Good talking to you.
We've heard the statement, stand up to cancer. Well, my next guest stood up to cancer, and he beat cancer. He was recently given a checkup about six days ago. It was given a clean bill of health. And I'm talking about Tony Beasley, the third base coach of the Texas Rangers. Tony, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Tony, tell me, first of all, how you feeling? And it's great news what you got a couple of days ago.
Absolutely. I feel great right now. I'm so grateful and thankful. I walk by faith through this thing, and I give God the glory and the credit for healing my body and putting me in the right hands and doctors that have got it and have done the right things. And I'm just blessed. And, I don't have a worry in the world right now.
Tell me how the Rangers treated you throughout this whole thing. Obviously, it had to be pretty good.
You know, it was amazing because last January when I was diagnosed, I let Jeff Banister, the manager, and John Daniels know, and just so happened the day I called, they were in a meeting, so they were all together. And John Daniels, the general manager, he called me, and the first thing he said to me was, "Do not worry about your job." You know, he said, "Your job is your job. It's not going anywhere." He said, "Just focus on getting you healthy and getting you back on the field where you belong." And so from that point, right from the beginning, it was 100% support, and they put me above just a job title or anything else. They valued the person over anything else, and that was important to me. So it just took a load off. I didn't have to think about or worry about the possibility of losing my job and things of that nature. So, that was awesome. And the support I got from the ownership was second to none. They made sure that I was at MD Anderson in Houston. They said that nothing against my doctors here in Richmond, Virginia, but they wanted me to have the best of care. And so they made a phone call and got me into MD Anderson. And not only did they do that, they took the private planes and flew me from Virginia to Houston, my wife and I, Stacy and I, and flew us back home, and not just once, numerous times, to make sure that we were accommodated. It was unbelievable, the support that I received from the Ranger organization.
And now you'll be back on the field for spring training. Tell me how much you're looking forward to being back with the team on a full-time basis. And, this team is still pretty good.
Yeah, the team's good, for sure. But, it's an honor for me to be able to have the privilege to do what I'm passionate about and what I love. To last year have something taken away from you, just reasons beyond your control, but to be able to kind of sit back and watch the year go by and not be able to participate, at full strength, it was tough. It was challenging. But at the same time, it was therapy. It was therapy for me to be around the team as much as possible as well. But this year I'm so honored and grateful that I'll have the opportunity to get back on the field and make those decisions standing at third base and hear the crowds cheer and hear them boo or do whatever, But just to be able to be in the action again and participate 100% and give the players 100% of myself as far as infield instructor and base running and stuff like that. It's just going to feel great to be back in full tilt.
I remember during the season last year, I mean, the players really thought about you a lot, and you had to feel good that they thought about you throughout the season.
Yes, I mean, the players, I mean, everyone was, I mean, incredible. I mean, I was totally overwhelmed by the love and the support from everyone, but the players were unbelievable because, you know, someone was going to start like a GoFundMe to help with expenses because I had to spend a lot of time in Houston. And Adrian Beltre and those players got a whiff of that, and that was like, we're not having that. And they said, he's a part of our family, and we're going to take care of all of his needs. And they did. I mean, they took care of every expense that I had. And Adrian pulled me aside, and he said, we don't want you to pay anything out of your pocket. Any expenses, hotels, meals, flights, whatever I need, he said, you let me know, and we'll take care of it. And I tell you what, they did everything that they could possibly do to make sure that, you know, everything I had to do was set up and was easy, and all I had to do was be present. And so just that, not just what they did financially, but the support, the love. When we clinched the AL West, they didn't even celebrate in Oakland until they FaceTimed me and they got me on the phone and you know, made me a part of it, and then they started celebrating. So it just was so special. They showed how much they care about me and about my health and my well-being, and I'm so appreciative.
Final question, Tony. Could you? What advice would you give anybody who is facing cancer? And obviously, you're a guy who stood up to it and won.
Yes. Yes.
What advice would you give?
Well, my favorite verse, number one, is 2 Corinthians 5:7. It says, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." And you know what? And I've always believed that. That was my favorite verse prior to this whole deal. But I had an opportunity to live it. And I think in life, you know, things can happen. And at some point, if you live long enough, you're probably going to experience something. You have a choice to see it as an obstacle or an opportunity. I chose this to be an opportunity, number one, to be who I said I was and to see if I could really be a man of faith and trust God. I surrendered my body. I surrendered the situation over to God, and I said, God, this is your battle. It's not mine. I can't fix it. I can't win it, but I know that he can do all things. I know he has all strength and all power, and I just gave it to God, and I tell you, Bill, I did not lose one night's sleep. I never worried. I never faltered. I had joy and peace through the midst of the storm. And God just continued to bring me through. Every time the doctor said I would go through chemotherapy or radiation and I would have this side effect or that side effect, I had nothing. I was protected by the blood of Jesus, I believe, and I just was shielded. And I just thank God, man. And if I could tell anyone anything, is to just really trust and believe that God loves you and that his desire is that we prosper and be in health. And sometimes we have to go through things, but you know what? You can be strong. You can have joy. And don't give in to anything. And don't allow anything to conquer you or take that joy away from you. Stand strong and believe and speak what you want over your life, what you want to happen. Those are the things that you should say daily. Those are the things that you should concentrate on. Don't allow anyone outside to say negative things or don't allow yourself to have negative thoughts, because those are the things that allow you to succumb to the situation. And so I'm just so thankful that I've learned a lot about myself and strength and just get up every day and keep going. As far as cancer was concerned, you know, I didn't have cancer. Cancer had me, and cancer had to deal with me. And I felt like I was going to win that fight, and I just thank God for the strength to carry me through.
Tony Beasley, I'm glad you're much, much better, and God bless you, and we'll see you doing spring training.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you, man.
I'm with one of the most stand-up guys in Major League Baseball. I'm talking about Bronson Arroyo, the right-hander who recently pitched for the Nationals. Bronson, thank you so much for being with me. Bronson, the last time I spoke to you, it was midsummer, and you had taken a little break because of a shoulder injury, and I'm just wondering what's the status of your shoulder and what are your plans for the future?
I finished up the whole minor league season, like you said, in the rookie league there with the Nationals, and I pitched about 34 innings down there, and I just couldn't get my arm to quite handle force. You know, I'd pitch in a game, and I would be fine during the game, but I couldn't turn it back around on 4 or 5 days rest. Sometimes it was needing 7 days rest, sometimes 10 days rest. So I got stem cells pulled out of my pelvis in late August, and shot in my arm, and it seems to be doing better. You know, I'm playing catch every day now, just training, getting ready for the season, try to give it one last go. I'm honestly not sure if my arm's going to survive. It's been a funny kind of long road since I've had surgery, and I can't quite pinpoint why some days I feel pretty good and then other days I just feel terrible. So, you know, I don't know that I'm going to survive this year, but I'm going to give it one last go and we'll see what happens.
What does this game mean to you, Bronson? Obviously, you're still giving it a go. You're playing catch. This game means a lot to you, does it?
Absolutely. You know, I think if you enjoy what you do, whether you're a painter or an artist or a musician or a construction worker, whatever it is you're doing to create in the world, if you enjoy doing it and you've enjoyed doing it for 30-plus years, as I have, playing this game of baseball, you know, since you're a little kid, you listen to the national anthem and you still get those same butterflies in your stomach. And the preparation and going to the weight room and listening to music while you're lifting and throwing your bullpen while the fans are chirping at you, you know, all these little things and the camaraderie amongst the guys, the travel on the road. And there's just so much of this game that fulfills your life, or at least it has mine, that it's just really tough to put down. You know, it's my life's work. I really don't have I have a bunch of small things that I would enjoy doing outside of the game, but I don't have one thing that really motivates me in the same way that baseball has. And so to put that down, it's very difficult, especially when the game is forcing you away from it rather than you choosing to go away from it. You know, I pitched for 19 and a half professional seasons without missing a start, and then my arm pretty much just dropped dead on me. So I'm trying to bring it back to life, but you know, it's something that's tough to put down.
I got to ask you, have you talked to people like Dusty Baker, any of your mentors, and have they told you what you should do?
Yeah, I talked to Dusty this offseason. I talked to him last offseason before, obviously, I signed with the Nationals. I talk with a bunch of guys who have already retired from the game. I went to David Ross's retirement party in November in Destin, Florida, which was amazing. And you know, I got to chat with guys like Kevin Millar that have stepped away from the game. And the advice that most guys give, you know, is one of two things. One is, hey, you're going to enjoy retirement a lot more than you realize. It's going to be nice to wake up and not have to pound your body in the weight room. You get that perspective. And there's also 4th of July parties, and we can go jet skiing in the middle of the summer and all the things we haven't been able to do as a ball player. And then you get the other side of the coin sometimes, which is, you know, get every little bit out of this game you can. Make them rip the shirt off your back and, you know, stick it out as long as you can, because there's just, you're never going to get that same high as there's competing on a big league field in anything else you get to do in life. And so, you know, I think everybody has to kind of weigh out their own options. And I've seen a lot of guys. Obviously, I'm going to be 40 years old this year, so I've seen most of the guys I've ever played with. They've had to retire prior to me. And, you know, I get to see kind of the whole spectrum of what happens with guys who have retired and wish they hadn't, and vice versa, guys that are happy to have retired. But for me, I think, you know, I'm just trying to ride the road as long as I can. If I think I can compete, if I think I can help a ball club, then I still want to do that. But I'm not sure that my arm is going to allow me.
Have you talked to any teams who have shown interest?
Yeah, a few teams have called, and I basically. Told them just to give me some time, give me until closer to January to see how my arm feels. I've been playing catch, for about a month and a half now, and I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm starting to put some force on it, because there's a big difference between just playing long toss and throwing on the mound and really putting a lot of force on your arm. Because at last spring training, I thought my arm was pretty good and ready to go, and I thought I was going to handle it. And then as I got into games, by the time I pitched three innings in a game, I just realized that it couldn't survive. So before I committed myself to anybody and got their hopes up that I would be able to help the ball club, I wanted to kind of ride the offseason a little bit deeper and see how the arm was going to react to me putting a lot of force on it.
Bronson, no matter what happens, you've had a great career. I mean, you helped the Red Sox win their first championship in many years, and I think it's safe to say no matter what happens, you leave the game with your head held up high.
Yeah, I've accomplished everything that I ever wanted to do in the game. I made more money than I ever thought I would. I've won a World Series with maybe one of the greatest group of guys to ever step on a baseball field. I won a Gold Glove in Cincinnati. I was an All-Star in 2006. So, you know, I have no regrets. You know, if you told me, hey, Bronson, I'm gonna give you a snapshot of your career. It's going to be 2015 or the middle of 2014. You're never going to pitch again, but this is going to be the career that I'm going to set for you. What do you think? I would have taken it in a heartbeat. You know, I've got nothing to complain about, absolutely. And it's what makes it a bit easier, honestly, for me to come to the weight room and kind of grind it out and see if my arm will go for a couple more years, just because it's icing on top of the cake. You know, if I was 24 years old, 25 years old, and I was sitting in the same position, I'd be panicked. I'd be fearful. You know, I would feel like, you know, some of my dreams were kind of crashing down upon me. But because I've been completely fulfilled in what I've done in this game and I'm content with my career, if it works, great. And if it doesn't, you know, I'll be happy. I'll be happy to sit on the sidelines and watch.
I like to tell the people listening that you do more than just pitch and play baseball. You also are a talented musician. And do you plan to go into the music business?
I don't think I will unless something strange happens. I definitely have some musician friends that I've met over the last 12, 13 years playing ball that have become very close. And these guys are all touring with other bands around the world usually. But when I get a chance to get them together, we have a really good time playing music. And you know, being on stage and singing, it absolutely gives me a good high and a good adrenaline rush and a good release of energy. So I think I'll always play. I just don't know if I'll take it serious enough to make it professional. You know, I'll probably sit and write a record someday, and if somehow, some way that record turns out to be something that people would want to listen to, then maybe it'll force me out there to play some shows. But other than that, I really think of music a lot as my own personal little hobby and something I can take to talk to kids at elementary schools or talk to college athletes or just sit around the campfire and play for your friends. So it's definitely something I can latch on to after the game. It's something that I can dig into a little bit, and it definitely is kind of taps into me on an emotional level. So it does feel probably the only thing outside of the game that can kind of give me a rise in emotion. So it's nice to have that kind of in the passenger seat.
Bronson Arroyo, thank you so much, and good luck to you.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
That's it for The Rocket Show. We'll talk to you next week.